Cape Talk, Pippa's Planet.
Well, today is World Oceans Day, and unfortunately, we don't have a lot to celebrate. We know our oceans face a growing pollution problem, particularly when it comes to plastic waste. How bad is it? And is there really a massive garbage patch the size of Texas floating in the Pacific? And what is it going to take to turn the situation around? Those are questions I'm hoping our incoming guest will be able to help us answer. We are awaiting the arrival of UCT Professor Peter Ryan. He's due to join us in studio to chat about plastic pollution. He is a specialist in marine, in birds in particular, but has a keen interest in marine litter because it intersects with his field of study because of the impact of plastic pollution on birds. So we'll be chatting to him, I hope, in a couple of minutes' time. In the meantime, I'm going to start with updating you on what a couple of retailers are doing, and then by speaking to somebody who has quite practical feedback for us on just how bad the problem is on our beaches here in the Cape. Before we say hello to my first guest, though, you probably heard John talking yesterday about Woolworths' announcement, or yesterday or the day before, that it is going to phase out single-use plastic shopping bags by the year 2020, that it's going to phase out unnecessary single-use plastics like straw and cutlery by 2022, and that these decisions are taken in part because of demand from customers for them to change their attitude to packaging. I think it's a step in the right direction, and I'm also with John in saying why the delay? Why does it only need to happen by 2022? Why not do it tomorrow? There are alternatives already available. Why not just take that decision and implement it immediately? Woolworth's not alone. We heard earlier today from Pick and Pay that they too are announcing big moves to reduce their plastic output, and they've announced theirs today specifically because it is World Oceans Day. Among the five targets that they've set for the short term, they are going to be introducing 100% recyclable plastic bags made from recycled plastic with no added calcium. Those are going to be in store from August of this year. We don't know yet whether they're going to be more expensive than the previous version, or whether you'll be offered either or whether they're going to phase out the old ones entirely, but at least the recyclable version will be introduced by August this year. They've also committed to phasing out plastic straws at the kiosks. Their Pick and Pay branded earbuds are going to be redesigned with a paper middle bit instead of the plastic. If you've ever done a beach cleanup, you will know that you pick up hundreds upon hundreds of the little plastic stick that is the middle of an earbud. My first beach cleanup, I thought they were all lollipop sticks, and I was trying to imagine how many children in Cape Town were eating lollipops until I realized what they were. They were the remains of an earbud. What else is Pick and Pay doing? They are introducing recycled PET in a whole range of their brand products, so moving away from non-recyclable plastic into a version that can recyclable plastic into a version that can be recycled or reused. So that those are all encouraging steps. I think I would ask what took you so long, but at least better late than never. And let's hope that it is going to be implemented sooner rather than later. How bad is the situation, though? Let's find out from somebody who has spent the last 3 years investigating plastic pollution on Cape Town beaches. Anya Omardin, on the line with me now, is the co-founder of something called the Beach Co-op. Anya, great to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thanks, Pippa, for having me.
It's a great pleasure. Before we talk about your studies, won't you just explain to us what the Beach Co-op is?
Okay, thank you. The Beach Co-op is a non-profit company which started at the end of last year. Before that, we were a voluntary group of mostly surfers that wanted to give back to our local surf break here at Musenberg Surfers Corner.
Okay. And what has what are some of the sort of elements of giving back that have emerged from the co-op?
So largely from starting out as a volunteer group and cleaning Surfers Corner itself, which is a rocky intertidal area, largely about 130 meters in length. And that came from a conversation with Professor Peter Ryan, in fact, who's been collecting data along South Africa's coastline for about 20 years. And he wanted to compare with what we would find in the rocky intertidal zone. And it's a wonderful thing to do. We do it every new moon. And it's really how the Beach Co-op started. From this little volunteer project, really, we've moved on to working in three specific areas. The first one is trying to keep our South African coastline clean. And we use a methodology developed by Peter called the Dirty Dozen methodology. And those are the top 12 items he's most commonly found. And earlier you mentioned earbuds. Earbuds are certainly one of the 12 on our list. Yeah. Then the second thing that we focus on is creating ocean guardians. And we do so, again, through using the Dirty Dozen methodology and getting people involved and engaged in trying to understand where this litter is coming from and how we can stop it along the supply chain. And then lastly, we look at that circular economy. So from consumer to design, how can we reduce and eliminate single-use plastic from that supply chain?
Okay, now, Anya, we've got Peter Ryan with us in studio. He's going to tell us more about those Dirty Dozen and the bigger picture. But before we let you go, I believe you've actually got a bit of a trash bash happening tomorrow at Sunset Beach, which members of the public can join. Won't you tell us what's happening?
Yes. So we're partnering with the Two Oceans Aquarium. This is our second trash bash at Sunset Beach, starting at 9 a.m. And it's very exciting because we're going to be doing four cleanups in the same area, and we'll be able to compare the data, the Dirty Dozen, for each beach cleanup. We've been surprised at how many individual sweet wrappers have come up. And that is another area where consumers can demand from restaurants, from retailers, to not package as much as they do.
Anya, that was going to be my final question, is what would your advice be to our listeners today on steps that they can take in their own lives to make a difference and not be part of the problem that you are monitoring on an ongoing basis?
Certainly, there's so many alternatives to single-use plastic, and really is to use those alternatives. For straws, they're bamboo straws, they're glass straws, they're steel straws, or you don't need a straw. And then with single-use plastic bags, you can get a tote bag, a shopper, you know, something that can be reused. You can do without those individual sweet wrappers, or encourage your restaurant to have a sweet dispenser instead of having individually wrapped sweets. So there's lots you can do, and ensure that you try and recycle. Only 9% of our waste is recycled.
That's a shockingly low figure. Anya, thank you so much. Hopefully we can see it climb into the double digits and the high double digits. Anya Omardin, one of the co-founders of the Beach Co-op, thanks for chatting to us. And I'm delighted to welcome in studio today somebody who played a crucial role in getting that co-op started, Professor Peter Ryan from UCT, who's based at the Percy Fitzpatrick Institute of African Ornithology. And before you say to me, hang on, why are you talking to a bird man about the water? He's got a very keen focus on marine litter, which, of course, intersects with his bird research, because seabirds in particular are often on the receiving end of our pollution. Peter, great to have you with us. Welcome to the studio.
Yeah, thanks, and sorry for being a little bit late. We got our wires crossed about the timing there.
No problem, but Anya's been doing a great job of telling us about some of the practical work that's happening here in Cape Town at your behest. Look, we all know we've got a problem in the oceans. We are seeing the photographs of turtles and birds entangled in plastic. Just this past week, we saw photographs of a whale in Thailand that had swallowed 80 plastic bags. Everybody knows it is a problem, but I don't know that everyone has a sense of just how big a problem it is. Can you quantify it for us?
Yeah, it's kind of tricky. I'm actually just writing a little popular article at the moment about the thing, and it's kind of strange for me because I've been working on plastics since the 1980s. Mm. You know, we first started getting plastic in seabirds in the 1960s even.
Sure.
So birds were one of the first indicators that something was going wrong. And in the 1980s, you know, it was really regarded still then as a bit of a curiosity. People weren't too fussed about it. And there was nobody else doing any plastic research. And that's how a bird person ended up picking up litter on beaches and just trying to get an idea of the scale of the problem. And we had a succession of meetings in the 1980s where the scientists all got together and pooled all the data and said, you know, clearly we've got a problem, we need to do something about it. Mm. And unfortunately, we kind of stopped there and just gave it over to the sort of decision makers and politicians, and nothing happened.
Didn't do anything.
Yeah, and it was really only towards the end of the 1990s when Charles Moore started publicizing the North Pacific garbage patch, and then Richard Thompson started discovering these little tiny microplastic fragments in plankton samples all around the world, that people really started to kind of think about the amounts. And a lot of the story around plastics comes down to numbers. You know, you'll hear some very dubious numbers. People will tell you that bags and styrofoam can live in the environment for 1,000 years, and maybe it can in certain circumstances, but probably won't if it's on a beach. You know, it'll degrade quite quickly. Mm. So there's a lot of dubious statistics out there, but there's some indisputable statistics about the amounts of materials that we've produced over the last 70-odd years. I mean, the thing about plastics are they're entirely synthetic products that we've created, and it's really only since the Second World War that we've started producing them in any sort of volume. And currently we're producing about 400 million tons per year globally, which is just a staggeringly large number. It's very hard for people to get their head around that amount of plastic.
Now, how is it ending up in the oceans? Is it accidental? Is it washing out from stormwater? Or is some of it at least intentional dumping?
Yeah, I mean, part of the problem is that it's such a widespread product in our environment. We can't live without plastics. And I'd be the very first person to say, you know, don't go on a plastic bashing sort of crusade. People who say they must have plastic-free days where you divorce yourself from plastic. It's crazy. Somewhere around about 60% of plastics goes into long-life products like, you know, this studio wouldn't exist without plastics. Our lives wouldn't exist. Lots of, from everything from transport to construction to food security all depend critically on plastics. But the problem comes with that sort of 40-odd percent of the 400 million tons that we produce goes into single-use plastics, and that's where the problem comes. The trouble is we don't value plastics enough. They're wonderful products, but they're cheap, and they're too cheap for us at the moment to make it really economically viable to go and recover those things. And what we need to do is build in that value so that we see that value and we can create jobs and opportunities through that value so that it doesn't end up either going in a hole in the ground or, even worse, blowing out of landfills or into rivers and ultimately ending up in the sea. And that's the real tragedy of the ocean. It's the sort of dumping ground for everything. Everything that we do on land ultimately ends up in the ocean.
You mentioned the North Pacific garbage patch, and we hear so much about that. I think it's one of those things about which there's a lot of misinformation and exaggeration happening. You hear it said that there is a garbage patch the size of Texas floating up there. Is there really?
Well, the garbage patches are basically, imagine you have a bucket of water and you throw something that floats on, like grass cuttings or something. If you swirl that bucket of water, all of the floating things will concentrate in the middle. And that's what we've been doing for the last 50, 60 years. We've been throwing grass cuttings into the ocean, little bits of plastic. And because of the way the oceans circulate, they aggregate in the center of the ocean. So there are these central gyre aggregations that occur not only in the North Pacific, but the South Pacific, the North Atlantic, the South Atlantic, and to a lesser extent, the Indian Ocean. The Indian Ocean's a little bit peculiar. So the North Pacific is particularly bad because all of the world's oceans, ultimately floating debris, if it carries on floating long enough, if you project forward in time, the models suggest that everything ends up in the North Pacific. So I think the North Pacific is the sort of clarion call, if you like. It's the canary in the coal mine that shows us how bad things can be if we carry on doing what we're doing. But it's certainly not a solid island or anything ridiculous. It's best described, I guess, as a plastic soup. If you go out there, you'll see some big things floating around, and if you scoop a net through the water, you'll find a higher concentration of small things. But it's not a massively visible feature.
There is, interestingly, a very young man out there trying to do something about it as of the last week or two. His name is Boyan Slat. He's a Dutch entrepreneur who's been working on the idea of a plastic gobbler since he was 16 years old. He's now 24, and he's out there with his prototype in the North Pacific, I think, as we speak. We reached out to him to speak to us today. He couldn't do it because he's out there trying to clear up plastic in the North Pacific, which is, I think, pretty amazing. But of course, we'd rather, Peter, that it didn't get there in the first place.
Absolutely. Boyan's a fascinating guy. He was in Cape Town last year for the Volvo Ocean Race. They had a big focus on plastics in the ocean. And so we got a chance to meet him. He's a charismatic kind of guy.
We're still going to carry on trying to get him onto the show at a later date when he's not quite so tied up with picking up plastic. Now, we want to talk a little bit about, obviously, what we as consumers can do to reduce the single-use plastic problem. But before we get to that micro level, at a macro level, I know last year nearly 200 nations, including South Africa, signed a UN resolution pledging to reduce plastic waste. How meaningful is that?
I think as a symbol, it has some meaning, but you know, it all comes down to implementation, and that's obviously where we struggle in this country in particular. We can have wonderful legislation, but the implementation of it leaves a little to be desired. And the challenge with plastics is, again, they are so widespread in our environment and in our daily lives that it's a challenging issue to kind of know where to start. It's certainly not on the scale of environmental problems like climate change and human population growth, which are the two biggest problems we face. But it is challenging. And I think what we need to focus on is not there's no silver bullet. There's no single solution. I mean, Costa Rica has gone the route of saying that they're going to ban all single-use plastics by 2021, I think, or 2020. Very, very ambitious target. And that's kind of one way to go, I guess. But I think practically in a country like South Africa, we have to tackle it at all levels of society. So we certainly need the top-down government approach, but we need the NGO sector. We need broad consumer demand to put pressure on retailers. So we have to tackle it at various levels. And, you know, obviously this kind of medium is a really great way to reach the grassroots and get people worrying about this problem. And maybe we should talk a little bit about why they should worry about the problem.
Let's do that. Please do explain.
So, I mean, yeah, you talked earlier about the sort of visible face of plastics in the ocean, the entanglement issue and the ingestion issue. But I think the biggest concern from a human perspective should be around the fact that these very small plastic items are getting into the base of the food web. So we live here in the Benguela upwelling region. We've got this massively productive ocean just off our coast, all of which is, well, a lot of it is driven by anchovy and sardine. 70% of those fish contain ingested plastic. Mm-hmm. So right at the base of the food web, we're getting these plastic things going in. And plastic per se, most plastics are pretty inert. They won't do anything to you. But there are some plastics which have nasty additives to give them specific properties, things like flame retardants and things that make plastics more flexible and so on. And if they get into us, they have nasty effects like causing cancers and have feminizing sort of hormone mimicking effects and so on. So there are issues around that. And then there's also what we call legacy pollutants, these long-lasting pollutants which we've banned from use in the environment, but they're still out there, things like PCBs and DDT. And as little bits of plastic sit in the ocean, they soak up those pollutants from the environment. And then once they're ingested by fish or zooplankton or whatever, the pollutants migrate into the body of the organism. So we sit as top consumers in a marine food web. We all like our, you know, sort of surf and turf and all the rest of it. We are getting those compounds. So that's really why I think we should be most concerned from an anthropocentric, absolutely human health. There are also economic impacts. You know, having plastics in wastewater systems greatly increases the risk of flooding during storm events. God forbid we have some rain. And then just the aesthetic impact. Some people don't like going to the beach when it's full of litter. So we spend as a country over 100 million rand a year on formal beach cleanups. And that's a lot of money that we could use more profitably elsewhere.
Building houses and feeding hungry people, for starters. When we were chatting to Anya, she mentioned that you have a dirty dozen that you highlight as the big culprits. Care to sketch for us a couple of the big ones?
The idea behind the dirty dozen is more just to keep a track of what's going on out there. So some of them are the obvious culprits, you know, the earbuds, the straws, the cigarette butts, although we don't actually get people to count cigarette butts. The problem with doing beach cleanups and trying to get people to collect data, the ICC does it once a year, the International Coastal Cleanup, and they get people to count everything. And once a year, that's kind of okay. But if you're going to ask people to go out every month or even more frequently, it just becomes very tiresome to actually keep track of all of the litter. So the idea with the Dirty Dozen was more a case of, let's just keep a track of some indicators. So these are indicators of different sources of plastic, and it's not too onerous, but it gives people a feeling that they're actually not only cleaning, but they're also contributing some data through a citizen science program.
Okay. We're just going to steal a couple of minutes, if I may, to wrap up the conversation around plastic and particularly plastic pollution in the oceans. Peter Ryan, we focused a lot on the nature of the problem and the scale of the problem. Let's talk a bit about solutions. What can you and I do as the ordinary consumer to be part of the solution?
Yeah, I think we need to educate ourselves to some extent. There's some wonderful literature coming out now. UNEP's just released a wonderful report on single-use plastics. It talks about the scale of the problem and what you can do about it. And there's another report that they've just released looking at alternatives to plastics in single-use applications and also pointing out some of the drawbacks with some of those. So one has to be quite intelligent about this. One of the projects that's really exciting is called 1 Million Women, where they're trying to get women, they acknowledge that women are responsible for about 85% of purchases in the household. So educating women to be more demanding as consumers. And one of the things they do is give them stickers to stick onto products that they say are overpackaged. So you can get your message through to the retailers. You know, WWF has been very effective in using the retailers as the choke point on managing SASSY and the fishing industry. Mm. And I know they're very keen to try to expand that into the plastic packaging world as well. But, you know, the retailers, for various reasons, I think are somewhat reluctant. I mean, there's this big fanfare about Woolworths, you know, but really 2022,
kidding me.
Costa Rica is going to give up the whole thing sooner than that. And all they're saying is that they'll make their packaging recyclable, which doesn't mean that it'll necessarily get recycled. So it's a step in the right direction, but we need to pressure retailers to do more. And if we get big buy-in from the retailers, then they can pressure the consumer, the producers to really look at the way that they package things. A lot of the problems come from inappropriately designed packaging that doesn't lend itself to recycling. And then the other thing we need to do is also just help capacitate municipalities to really promote sorting at source. I spent yesterday morning down at Coastal Park, and it's an education to go and see, you know, just the volume of rubbish that goes into there every day. I mean, we're building a mountain on the Cape Flats. It's no longer the Cape Flats. It's now, you know, the Cape Flats plus this mountain. And, you know, chatting to the guys there, they say, oh, they've extended their license until 2025. I mean, we're going to have another table mountain out there. So we really need to look at how we manage solid waste in total. It's not just a plastics issue.
Fascinating insights. I'd like to keep you with us just to listen to this call that's come in from Patrick, who's on the line from Cormickey. Patrick, you're the chairman of the Far South Peninsula Community Forum, and I believe you are busy working on this issue of saying no to single-use plastic in your own local restaurants. Good afternoon.
Yes, Pippa. Hi. Thanks for that. We are indeed, and it's starting off with a survey of local retailers, mostly in the food industry. And there are about, I think we've got about sort of 75 or more on the list between Muesenberg, Simonstown, sort of on the False Bay coast, and then around on the Atlantic coast up to Noordhoek. And so far we launched it on World Environment Day, which was Wednesday or Tuesday, and so far we've had fairly good responses from those retailers. So the message is getting out there. And I think there's a general interest in cutting back, certainly on the single-use plastics. So I think that's speaking to Peter Ryan's sort of comment on putting pressure on the retailers. And there's nothing like a good, forceful consumer to do that.
Absolutely. Patrick, well, thanks for what you're doing, and I hope you'll keep in touch with us about the outcome of those surveys. I'd be interested to get the big picture that you encounter once you're done with the research. I love the idea of the sort of small act of packaging vandalism, of sticking a sticker on that says, hey, this is not okay. Where do we get those stickers, Peter?
Yeah, that's an Australian idea, but one of my neighbours is very keen to take it up. So, maybe watch the space. Maybe we can get Anya and the Beach Co-op to roll those out.
I, for one, would buy a roll of those, I've got to be honest. We've got a voice note on the issue of plastic. Let's take a listen before we wrap up the conversation.
I took out the dirt this morning and it was one Checkers bag of dirt. Majority of the time it's not even a Checkers bag full, it's like three quarters or half full. And when I take out the recycling, it's like two black bags full of dirt. So, or recycling. So I don't understand why aren't we giving recycling bins 240 liter bins instead of giving the normal rubbish 240 liters, and make people, like, force them to do more recycling. Then it just doesn't make sense. Like, go in a direction which is better for the economy because you're creating more jobs. Go towards an option that's actually gonna be more efficient for the environment as well. Just makes common sense.
I've had the same experience myself. I was horrified when I finally got around to starting recycling. I hadn't realized that the difference was going to be that significant, Peter. And I think most people don't. If until you start doing it, you don't realize just how much you're throwing away that could be recycled or reused.
Yeah, I mean, if the manufacturers got their act into gear, we would really have to throw away virtually nothing. And that's the idea of the circular economy. You know, we should compost all our food waste, and then everything else should be reused. There's no reason for us to throw anything away. It's just crazy.
Professor Peter Ryan, thank you so much for being with us today. Fascinating conversation, and one I hope we can continue at a later date in more detail.
Thanks a lot.